Hey everyone, it's Saturday, February 20th, 2021. Welcome to episode 54 of the Ginger and the Beard podcast. I'm AJ, aka the Ginger.
And I'm Reese, aka the Beard.
And on this week's show, we'll be drinking and reviewing delicious craft beers, discussing the Polish Power's prediction for his first title defense, and talking about NASA's Mars rover landing.
We'll also be talking about a historic UFC weight miss, a new type of AR headset from Lynx, and Diablo 2 Resurrected.
But before we get started, I want to remind you all to subscribe on YouTube, follow us on Spotify, and come interact with us on Instagram or Twitter.
Yes, and make sure to check out the YouTube chapters or the timestamps in the description if you'd like to skip around to your favorite topics. All right, man, let's give the people what they came to hear and get the show started. What you drinking tonight?
Oh, man, I'm excited for this one. This is a brewery I've been looking forward to trying for quite a while now, very close to home. It's Ouzelfinch. It's Ouzelfinch Beers and Blending. So this here is the Party Dinosaur. Check out this can, man.
Oh, nice. There we go.
For you guys listening in your cars or wherever you happen to be listening, your office, it's hard to describe this can other than to say it's just packed full of like art.
That's the can art we like to see right there. It looks like it's a dinosaur's birthday kind of deal.
Yeah, it's a T-Rex wearing a crown and a bunch of other dinosaurs, a Velociraptor, a Triceratops, some of them wearing like little party hats. They're in a jungle. It's like a metallic-y sort of reflective can, like a foil sort of wrap.
Party and right dinosaur.
Right there in the middle is this outline of what we will talk about in a second is the Ouzelfinch. It's the representation of their brand. So yeah, this is a Party Dinosaur Smoothie Sour. So definitely out of season a little bit with a sour when it's 37 degrees outside. Yeah. But put a poll up on Instagram earlier today and 63% of people chose this beer over the contender. So I'm excited to try this one out, man. Ouzelfinch is a brewery, like I said, close to home. They're in Fort Monroe, which is technically, I think, part of Hampton, but it's actually a decommissioned military installation that dates way back into the 1800s. I'm going to talk a little bit about that in a second, but let's not delay. Let's go ahead and crack this open.
Cool.
See what we got in store here, folks. Yeah, definitely a rainy, cold week. Kind of odd to have a sour at the end of that, but you know what? I'm not against it. Hey, go ahead and give this a pour.
Gotta switch it up every once in a while. Oh, very light. It's a very like light, creamy looking kind of on this end.
Oh yeah, definitely a light indeed. Still like
very hazy.
Yeah, hazy, pretty opaque. I can't really see through that. The head just dissipated very quickly. Let me see if I can pour a little bit more into here. Give a little swirl here. So yeah, like I said, it's a smoothie style sour. I was actually kind of expecting it to be a little thicker than that based on the description, but for a little bit more context here, this is brewed with banana, nutmeg, coconut, almond, vanilla, and lactose.
Jeez.
Whew. Packed full of flavor, guys. And man, on the nose here, the aroma. Not as pungent as the one last week that just like kind of struck me in the face from across the room, but definitely a lot of flavor just in the aroma here. Lots of kind of tropical vibes off of this. I think what I pick up on the most is probably that banana, honestly, which is interesting. I'm not sure if you've ever had a banana sour before,
it sounds like you're drinking like a pina colada, but like a beer pina colada sour.
It's like a beer alada or whatever. But yeah, it does kind of give like the coconut banana definitely gives a little bit of a pina colada vibe. And it's actually, I was looking on their website, is inspired by a Mexican drink, which is called a horchata.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You've heard of that? I never heard of that.
I've had it before. Yes.
Okay. So before I give a sip here, the horchata, if you guys are interested, is actually a traditional Mexican drink, which is made up of white rice soaked in water, then flavored with cinnamon. And sweetened with granulated sugar. So I guess non-alcoholic unless you add alcohol to it.
But, right.
Definitely interesting. Let's go ahead and give this a sip.
When I used to smoke vape for that brief amount of time, they had like a horchata one. But I've also had horchata, but I also did that. I worked with this girl and she would bring it in. It was pretty cool.
Nice.
I thought it was milk though, but I thought it was milk. Essentially. I thought it was like cinnamon milk, honestly. That's what I thought it was. Yeah.
Well, I watched them making it. It was like a little video of them making horchata on the website I was looking at. It looked a lot like milk. I guess if you soak white rice long enough, it turns milky looking. So on that first sip there, I definitely pull a lot of that, I guess the nutmeg and the cinnamon. I mean, sorry, the coconut. Very strong coconut. Definitely is kind of reminiscent of a pina colada. Very light bodied. Not really as creamy as I was kind of hoping it would be. I think I saw the smoothie style, read about the lactose. The mouthfeel isn't exactly what I was hoping it would be. I was kind of hoping for something a little bit more thick and maybe medium bodied, but I'm going to give it another sip here.
Yeah, I thought, with all that lactose, you would assume that it would have like that top of your roof of your mouth kind of feel to it. And
yeah, I was kind of expecting it to be more of a coating sort of feeling to it. The aftertaste, I mean, it definitely, the aftertaste is quite nice. I mean, not over the top sour, definitely a little bit of that saltiness to it, but not like, I guess gozas traditionally are the saltier of that, that style, I'd imagine. But, you know, it's not quite salty, but on the finish there, I pull out more of those nutty flavors, the nutmeg, the almond, kind of pulls through. I'm not picking up a lot on the vanilla, honestly, but the banana and the coconut is definitely what hits me up front. And it's, you know, it's a very easy drinker. It's 6.5% ABV. Again, odd to be drinking this in the wintertime.
Yeah.
Glad I tried it, but I definitely would want to come back to this, you know, when it's a nice 80 degrees or so outside and sun shining on me. Then that's what this would really, really hit the spot. But, you know, if sours are your things, I would definitely say recommend checking them out. I'm excited to try some more of their beers. I know that they have them in like Total Wine and things like that. And also not a far drive for me. To go visit them in person, which is definitely something I'd want to do. But before we close out here on my beer, I just kind of clue you guys in on, if you're curious like I was about what is an Ouzelfinch, as I alluded to here with the can, you can kind of see this is like a, let me see if I can line this up, is like an outline of a bird of some sort. So their website actually has a really nice picture of it. I recommend you guys go check that out. But here is what their website says about the Ouzelfinch. So it says, excuse me, one night in 1905, Captain H.M. Merriam, while quite possibly under the influence of our favorite beverage, swore he saw a strange large-eyed bird outside the Fort Monroe Officers Club. His outlandish tale quickly spread throughout the community, and the bizarre creature later became the mascot of the club. Merriam's fellow officers dubbed the bird the Ouzelfinch, and placed a figurine of its likeness on a shelf behind the bar. The Ouzelfinch rose to mythic status on Fort Monroe, and regular sightings reportedly occurred.
Oh, jeez.
So, yeah, it's kind of like, I don't know, one of those things. Yeah, like Sasquatch, yeah. Or like snipe hunting. You want to go snipe hunting. You know, I guess they made up this big, tall bird with big eyeballs on top of its head. So that's the Ouzelfinch.
Did your parents try and get you to go snipe hunting as well?
I had kids at school who thought it was hilarious. Like, they knew I was like not an outdoors kid, and they were like, hey, you want to go snipe hunting one weekend? I'm like, yeah, I guess, I don't know.
Sure.
But anyways, man, this is good. I'm sure this is something that would be right up your alley. Definitely not. I mean, it's probably a pretty good entry level sour for people who are not used to the sours. Which is good for me. You know, it's just not over the top sour. The banana kind of smooths it out, and the nutmeg and the almond and all that definitely add some character there on the finish. So definitely a really well-rounded beer. I just kind of a little bit let down-ish, I guess, about being called a smoothie style. I was really expecting something a little bit thicker, more medium to heavy bodied, and that lactose to really stand out and kind of coat the inside of my mouth, but not exactly what we got there. But you know, yeah. I'm sure they hit exactly what they're trying to do. So
I'm not surprised. Check them out.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, definitely check them out. Yeah.
I think Ouzelfinch actually, they distribute pretty far too. I think that they have like, I don't know if they have like an actual operation in California, but I know that I saw that they actually do distribute in California. So So Reese, you might even actually be able to find some near you, but
really,
but anyways, man,
yeah, wait, I thought they were in Virginia, but they reach all the way out there. Okay. Gotcha.
Yep. Yeah. They got some pretty vast distribution. So,
yeah, you know, when I, you know, see milk, like the milkshake or like smoothie type of deal on the shelf, like I've tried a bunch of them and like, I'd say like majority of the time, like 4 out of 5, like I get let down and I'm like, this isn't like what I was looking for. Like I was looking for something like creamy almost. Right. And, I was fortunate enough, Old Ox, I don't know if you've ever had Old Ox, but they're in Northern Virginia out my way. They had a strawberry milkshake. I can't remember what, it was an ale, I'm pretty sure, but I can't remember exactly what it was. And it was phenomenal. So it was like, you got strawberries. It was creamy. It was like the closest I've ever had to an actual strawberry milkshake in a beer. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah. So like Drecker is a brewery in North Dakota, I believe. And if you check out their Instagram page, their smoothie sours, like look like you're pouring melted ice cream out of a can. Like it's that level. Oh yeah, dude, it's crazy, but haven't had any of those yet. But anyways, I'd recommend you guys check this out. See for yourself what you think. But I'm excited to hear what you got tonight, man. What are you drinking? What'd you bring tonight?
Yeah, man, I got a Breda Tangerine. That's the name of it. Firestone Walker. I mean, you've probably heard of them by now. You know, I've had them on the show a couple times now.
Oh, yeah.
Never really bringing on any of their lighter beers, though. So this is, honestly, I don't know how many of their lighter beers I've had. Usually it's, you know, a lager or a stout or a porter. Like, usually something dark and intense, but... This here is a Breda Tangerine. So these guys are out of California, and this is a Berliner Weissbier, whatever. I'm not sure why, but online it said that it was 4.9% ABV, but on this bottle it actually says 6.2%. So, yeah, I'm not really sure why it would say that, but I'm just going to go off of the bottle because that's probably accurate. It was bottled May 1st, 2018.
Oh wow.
So on there. So it's been 3 years almost, right? So yeah, it's been around for a while. And it's fermented with tangerines, like not just any tangerines. They actually went to a native farm right down the road from themselves and got their own like local tangerines, lemons and some other things and threw them in there. Brewed them, you know, into their beer. Just get them in there. So it says a barrel ratio is 100% French oak, so aged in French oak barrels. That's pretty cool. Maturation time is 8 to 36 months. So I think I'm like right at the maturity of this beer. Like I don't think I could let it go for too much longer. Yeah. So I'm very excited about that. You know, the rest of it, I can't really, not really. It says Microflora, a proprietary blend of Brettanomyces. Am I saying that right? Is that how you say it?
No idea.
And yes. Lactic acid bacteria. Lactic acid bacteria. So, yeah, okay. Man, pretty excited about this. I guess it was built on the base Breda Weiss. I'm not really sure what that means, but they're using 1,000 pounds of Murcott tangerines. And wow. This is supposed to be a very juicy, wild beer with bright, vibrant tangerine goodness. So we're going to find
That's
out.
Interesting.
We got a nice little, I had to twist the little metal off, you know, like if I was drinking like, this is like a classy beer here, dude. What am I getting into?
I don't know.
You ready for this pop, dude? If this thing goes everywhere, I'm going to be like, I'm going to be so pissed. Oh my God.
Can do it. Use those muscles. Oh, boom. Wow, I did. All right. No explosion.
Hey, this is a sour, actually. Yeah, I can already tell.
I would imagine so with 1,000 pounds of tangerines.
Yeah,
it's sour.
This smells like a farmhouse. Not a Berliner Weiss. It smells like a sour. Let's go ahead and pour it out. Already, oh man, look at the head. There's a lot of head, so I got to pour this a little bit slower. It is clear golden. you can see right through this. It actually looks really nice. You can see like the bubbles forming as you pour it out. Yeah, this is.
That's a really nice color, actually.
Yeah, I. Wow. You can see right through it, dude. Look at me. Hey.
Look at you. How's it going? Look at little Reese in there.
Hi there. If anybody's out there watching the video, you can see me through my glass. Really nice. Yeah, so see-through, very nice color. It had about an inch of foam on it. The bubbles were fairly uniform. The bubbles are going away quite fast, actually. Fairly uniform, not 100%, I would say. A lot of medium, a lot of small bubbles. You know, so let's give it a sniff. A lot of acidity, tons of acidity. It's basically just tartness and acidity. It smells like it's going to pinch my tongue.
Nice.
I'm not getting like any tangerines or anything else, really. It's just, so let's just go ahead and let's give it a sip. Let's see what happens.
I'm expecting a pucker.
Oh, that's a pucker. Oh, shit. Wow.
36 months of tangerine goodness.
Oh my God, dude. This is not a beginner beer. So if you guys have never, if you don't have any experience with sours, stay away from this. Wait, drink Gozas, drink, you know, entry level sours for like 6 months and build up your taste buds. Cause, this one will make your face fucking cringe. Yeah, for sure. Let me give it another sip.
Pucker up, buttercup.
Okay. Okay. This like taste profile is very complicated. It's like it's hard for me to get past the tartness and the sourness to really like get the flavor profile, but I can taste tangerine. I can taste citrus notes like lemon. I'm getting that, but it was like it wasn't the first sip. It took me like 3 seconds before I could even like start to get those hints. But now that I'm like drinking it and like I've gotten past the tartness, right? After like probably let's do a third sip real quick. Hold on.
Yeah, I'm curious, how does yours mellow out? Does it mellow out with the aftertaste a little bit?
Yeah, so that first sip is pretty tough. I think the second sip was a lot easier. This third sip was not hard at all. This third sip was very enjoyable. It is so acidic though. This is crazy. It is like, you ever just bite into an orange and like, not an orange, but a lemon. And like if you just ignore the sourness of it, like the acid, like feeling in your mouth, like that's all I'm feeling right now. It's just all that acidity. So,
bro, pretty, you better
pop
those Tums.
Yeah, watch out, dude. Might have to pause the video. So you know, I got a little bit of tangerine, a little bit of mostly lemon, actually, is what I got out of this. So very interesting. It's you know, lighter, medium body. Pretty cool, man. I gotta say, I like it. I would certainly recommend it to people that have been drinking sours for a little while now. You know, even I think this might even be a little bit more advanced for me. This is like me like hitting my limits, actually. And I've had a couple that were like way more intense than this, but like I can actually enjoy this now, where I know 3 or 4 years ago I would have just put this back down. I wouldn't even finish it, but I'm going to finish it because it's enjoyable. So yeah, man, pretty happy about that.
Awesome. Sounds good, man. A couple of sour beers over here on our end, but you guys out there, let us know, what are you drinking tonight? Be it the weekend, be it a weeknight, let us know. Any sour beers for you this cold winter? Are you holding out to the summer? So drop us a line on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, you know where to find us. But I think now, man, we've got a little bit of UFC news to get into.
Yes, sir, we sure do. And we're getting into it now. Oh my God. You know what I just poured out? Sorry, guys. I just poured out the bottom of it into another glass because I wanted to save a sip for my wife. Look at this.
Is that all sediment? Like, what is that?
Do you see it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all sediment. What is it? It's all sediment. It looks like freaking yeast and like tangerine. Ah, oh, dude, that's what I missed out on. Hold on now. Hold on. I'm sorry, guys. We're going back a little bit. Look at all. Look at this.
Wow. Look at the color difference. Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Need like a label that says like swirl before enjoying or something.
Yes, absolutely. And I love this stuff, dude. This is all the yeast and stuff that was sitting at the bottom. Some people don't like this, but fuck it, dude. I love it.
Add some character.
Yeah, that definitely added some character to it. I feel like I got a little bit more fruity flavor out of that.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, man. Cool. All right, let's talk UFC.
Very nice. Interesting. Well, now you know for next time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Give it a little roll before pouring. But yeah, so what's, I mean, honestly, man, right now we're in the midst, as we speak, of some UFC action happening. Obviously, tonight's fight night, Derek Lewis versus Curtis Blaydes. I haven't watched any of the main card at this point. It's 9:30 our time currently, so the main card's probably wrapping up. They might even be into the main event, honestly, but I will have to be catching the replays of this one, unfortunately. I'm excited to see how that turns out, but you guys listening to this right now obviously know how it turned out, so let's focus on some stuff that's happening coming up. So we know Jan Błachowicz, the Polish power, has his first titled events coming up against Stylebender, Israel Adesanya. And some, you know, a lot of people, ourselves probably included, have kind of said this might be an easy belt for Izzy to move up and take this belt. But interestingly enough, in an interview, I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago, Jan had said that he expects this fight to end in the second round with a left head kick to Israel Adesanya, him out KO. He's visioning it. He's got it in his mind. He might be one of those people where they can just like laser focus on something and like make it come into fruition. So, interesting.
He is the champ. I mean,
yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I'm excited to see how this plays out. I think you and I have talked about, we're not sure if Izzy can stand up to that power, but we'll find out. But I thought this was hilarious because we referenced this maybe a couple episodes ago where I don't think we're talking about Jan. I think we're talking about Volkov. We're saying we need him to go to the mountains, or no, who are we talking about going to the mountains and like training? Was it Connor? We're like, we need him to go into the mountains and like
lift. Yeah, Rocky IV style, you know.
Yeah, so speaking of mountains, part of Jan's interview, he said he was talking about training in the mountains. I guess he was like, the mountains take your power, but when you return to your city, they give it back to you twice more. So I guess he's like training in the mountains at higher altitudes, which makes it like way harder on his body. But when he returns to like regular altitude, he's like supercharged, right?
Yeah, Rock Lee taking the weights off. Piccolo taking the weights off, you know?
Oh, yeah. Good old Piccolo, man. Oh, dude. We need to nerd out on some Dragon Ball one day.
Absolutely, man.
I don't think I've ever been more excited as a young child than when Piccolo took those weights off his ankles. And I was like,
oh, he took the weights off. Oh, my. Yeah, he's so fast over. Now. Oh, my God.
Game over. So anyways, that was a little quick hitter there. We'll see. We'll see if he can call, if he predicts it right, man. I mean, what's your take on that?
I that's great. I'm still in the, you know, I'm still on Team Izzy, you know. I think this is going to be like really scary for me. Like I'm going to be like holding my seat, you know. I'm going to be like white knuckled and stuff cuz like,
yeah.
Jan's got the knockout power, dude. If he connects, then he might take him out. But Izzy's so elusive and hard to hit. So I think the longer this fight goes, the more chance there is that Izzy could get knocked out. But, I mean, we both know how tactical he is, how technical he is. So, I'm still going with Izzy just because of his skill, just pure skill.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think I agree with you on that, man. I think he might just pick Jan apart, but we'll see. I'll be looking out in the second round for a left high kick. I know that.
Yeah.
So, you know, Izzy's about to get his chance at that belt. Somebody else getting another chance. Azatar. I don't know how to say that. You guys might recall about a month ago, we talked about how he was cut from the UFC on very short notice after sneaking a guest.
Yeah.
Along with a mystery bag of goodies of some sort.
What's in the bag? Sorry.
What's in the bag?
What's in the bag?
Into the hotel in Abu Dhabi. I can't remember what the name of the hotel is, but anyways, where all the fighters stay. So here was the quote when this happened about a month ago. Here was the quote from Dana. Azaitar and his team cut their wristbands off and got them to people on the outside. White told MMA junkies Farah whatever as he blah blah blah. This guy got inside the bubble, went through a room, shimmied down four balconies, went in through Izatar's balcony, and dropped off a bag of we don't know what. Then he changed his clothes and went back outside of the bubble. We got everything on camera. We saw the whole thing and how it all went down. Pulled his fight and cut him. So he was cut, but now Dana White has given him a second chance. Apparently there's been some additional discussions with his manager, which I think is Ali Abdelaziz or something like that.
Dude, that's the best Uber driver you've ever seen, dude. It's like it's Uber Eats, bro. What's up?
I'm telling you, dude. The news that came out was like, apparently it's a misunderstanding. It's a big misunderstanding. I'm like, bro, he was afraid he was underweight. He needed to get a double cheeseburger from the McDonald's in Abu Dhabi.
Exactly, dude. Exactly. McLovin' it, bro. Yeah, no. So absolutely, it had to have been.
It probably was something stupid like that, but I mean, it couldn't have if it was drugs in the bag. Well, number one, they had to have investigated what was in the bag, right?
Right.
Because it could have been something super dangerous. Like, it could have been weapons. It could have been, who knows? Like, you never know. Yeah. I think last time we talked about this, we speculated it was a prostitute stuffed in the bag. I mean, realistically.
Nudie magazines.
I was like, it can only be one of a few things. Food, drugs, or prostitute.
Or prostitute. Yeah, right? That's the only stuff that's all that would make sense.
Yeah, what but else like, do you need to sneak in?
I mean, the only thing that really makes sense to sneak in to something like that would be drugs, I feel like.
Right.
Were they're up there snorting yayo, you know? Is that what was going on?
Yeah, who knows?
Taking it back to the 80s?
It's hard to say, man.
Tony Montana style. What's up?
I just hope that one day the news comes out and we find out what was in the bag. But for now, Ottman's got a second chance and he's still undefeated. So I'm excited to see kind of what he does in the UFC. I'm sure that story is not gonna evade him for some time now. But
he's gonna get
good
interviewed.
For him, I guess.
He's gonna get interviewed after if he wins after the fight. It's gonna be like, so what was in the bag?
Yeah. Joe Rogan in the octagon. Congratulations on your fight, man. It was an honor to call your fight, but the world wants to know.
What's in the bag?
What'd you have in that bag, bro?
What'd you have in that bag? Come on, just tell us. What's up?
Yeah.
Was it a hamburger? We want to know. All right. Man. Well, you know, I got, I guess this is, I don't know, this is bad news. That's good news, I guess. This is bad news. And, you know, everybody's probably seen it already today, but Alves. Says eating salmon caused him to miss weight by 11.5 pounds. So Rafael Alves missed weight today. So he's not able to fight today. Not only did he miss weight, but he like historically missed weight. He missed weight worse than anybody's ever missed weight before in the UFC. So yeah, like he's got a record now. He's got a record. That's one way to
good
do
job.
It, man. He blamed salmon somehow for his historic weight loss. So let's get into that a little bit. Also, this was his UFC debut. So not a good debut, bro. And also, like, not only was it his UFC debut, but he's coming from the Dana White Contender Series. So, like, Dana White signed him. And you're just, like, starting off on the wrong foot, buddy. How are you going to come in and piss Dana off and do this
bad
during
look.
Your yeah this is just really bad. So like not only did he miss the featherweight limit but he also missed the lightweight limit. So like he was supposed to weigh in at 145 and so he weighed in 11.5 over and it was he weighed in at 157.5 which oddly that's weird. So I guess it was maybe they gave him like a leeway 146. It's supposed to be 145. So
yeah,
yeah
I
don't know.
I think for non-title fights they get like an extra pound.
Okay.
Yeah.
then get an extra pound. That's cool. That's cool. So, you know, he said to reporters, I ate salmon yesterday and fell ill. Vomit, diarrhea. So the doctor said I had to treat it with water, so drinking water. he only had 2 kilograms left to lose, which is 4.4 pounds, which is, you know, still pretty significant. And then when he drank the water, his weight went back up and it got stuck there. So the doctor didn't clear him for the fight, but then he just weighed in anyway, I guess, and was just like way overweight. So, here's something very interesting. He says he typically weighs at 195 pounds, which aren't you like around there? Are you like what, like 170, 170?
I'm like 180, 190.
Yeah. So, around there. So just imagine like cutting 50 pounds. You know, in like a 2 week period, like that's,
and I don't, and I'm not even like these dudes are 195, like with solid muscle mass. Like,
yeah,
it's insane.
It really is. And, you know, so he's dropping from 195 to 145. So basically what's happening now is he's not going to fight at 145 anymore. He talked to Sean Shelby. Sean Shelby said, this is, you know, shit like this happens. You need to just be healthy. Health is more important now. Don't fight at 145 anymore. Fight at 155 and, you know, we won't have an issue here. And I think they didn't cut him, right? Because I'm pretty sure that he was coming in as a replacement for somebody else, or there was some issue with like matchmaking to get him his first fight, right? And so they weren't like really worried about it, because like they were like switching up his fighters, or he was being brought in and he wasn't really focused, didn't have enough time to focus and all that stuff. So they're like, yeah, shit's happened, you know, whatever, yeah, let's move past this. But I tell you what, man, don't fuck up again.
No, yeah, he'll definitely be put on notice at that point. I mean, yeah, this is a perfect example of why, I mean, people talk about it all the time, like, what can we do in the UFC to prevent people from doing it? It's not healthy, dude, to cut down from 195 to 145. Are you kidding?
Yeah, there should be, like, every fighter should have to weigh in, like, every month, right? It's like they have to do like a monthly, because like they're contractors, but they contractors have to get like certified and they have to get like permits and stuff like that. So it's like, to be a UFC fighter, like, you know, you should have a permit to fight at a certain weight, but to maintain that permit, you have to like weigh in every month.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? That's not a bad idea. Yeah. I mean, and what I think kind of gets me is when he's saying, the doctor told me I had to drink water. And drinking water made my weight go up. Okay, dude, that means you were like deflated, dehydrated, and like, you know, you're basically one of those little dehydrated pasta meals that you get like taking space, right? And like you add water to it and it like blows back up.
Yep.
Like that can't be good for you.
But I don't understand why he's talking about the salmon. He said the salmon like made him sick, I guess, gave him diarrhea. And it's like, yeah, dude, I don't think it was the salmon.
Yeah.
I think it probably was the fact that you were cutting weight like really crazy, like, and then you just ate something. Like your body,
like, what? Food.
Like, yeah, like if you fast for like, you know, like Ramadan and stuff like that. Like if you do like Ramadan and you fast for like a month, like you can't just like come back and just eat like a feast. You know, you have to like, it's really weird. The body has to like work its way up.
Yeah,
or you know, it can't hold it. So. That's
well, yeah,
what's
probably
happening.
Because like the enzymes in your stomach and stuff, like you probably start to lose like some of those enzymes that like break down the food. So then he's just like, we can't do this, man. It's gotta go back out.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess good for him. He's got a second shot, and he hasn't gotten cut. But you could see if you watch the weigh-in footage, he was pretty upset about it, and was kind of like, he teared up and everything, and was pretty bummed out that it happened, I guess. But
he was happy. He set a record. Yeah, those exactly. Were tears of joy.
Now, and like, you know, when they come out and like at the bottom left of the screen, it's always like shows people's records, like second most finishes in the light heavyweight division. First his gonna be like
worst weight cut.
Yeah, worst weight miss in UFC history.
Yeah. That's funny. Oh man.
So, man.
Well, that's it for UFC, man. I guess, you know, not really anything to transition. No good segues here. So let's just talk about tech news.
Yep. Yeah. Let's do that.
Oh, yeah. All right, man. Let's hear what you got for us.
Yeah, man. So we got some big news. Unless you live under a rock, you probably already know about this. So NASA, if you don't know NASA, they are the National Air and Space Association. Is that right?
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
That's right. They sent a vehicle into space, and it traveled for many, many months, and it landed on a big giant planet called Mars. So it's the Perseverance Mars rover on Thursday touched down successfully on the red planet. A 7-month journey. Isn't that crazy to think that it takes 7 months?
Right.
Not to mention that I don't know how fast it's traveling while it's on its way there.
I think it's like pretty damn fast.
How fast does Perseverance travel?
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if it was like Mach 1 type stuff.
12,000 miles per hour. So 12,000 miles per hour.
I can run that.
At 7 months, then you're at Mars. So pretty awesome. They landed it right where they wanted to in the Jezero crater. I think that's how you say it. Or Jezero crater. I think that's how you say it. And I found some interesting stuff about it. I mean, obviously, I'm not a space buff. I'm not going to pretend to be. But I thought this was like worth talking about. But interesting fact, it took 5 years worth of research to choose a landing site. Just to choose a landing site, it took 5 years.
That's
so there's
wild.
A team of people that just constantly day in and day out are looking at places on Mars to evaluate their, how good they are as a landing zone or whatever. But I think I read they have had 60 different contenders as to where they could potentially land this thing. But they chose the Jezero crater because it was once was flooded with water and it was very close to a dried riverbed. So essentially what Perseverance's mission is to go there and collect ground samples. So it's literally got like this little drill. From what I can tell, it looks like it's maybe like 12 to 18 inches long. Goes down into the ground, collects some samples, and I guess hangs on to them. And eventually the idea is that they're going to send another mission to Mars, get those samples, and actually retrieve them, bring them back to Earth, which will be the first time that's ever happened.
What? They're bringing them back?
Yeah. Pretty intense. So we're going to have to witness an actual launch from Mars. That'd be intense.
No shit.
So... beyond just that, what's really cool about Perseverance is that there's a drone / they call it a helicopter. It's called Ingenuity. I'd suggest you guys go and look up a picture of this thing. It essentially looks like a drone that's got two propellers or two rotors stacked on top of each other. And like a tiny little like shoebox size, I guess, battery pack or something underneath of it that has a camera installed. But they will be flying this thing. It launches, it basically is carried underneath of Perseverance. Perseverance sets Ingenuity on the ground, rolls away from it, and then this thing takes off from the ground, flies around, surveying the land from the air, but it's not going, it's not like flying way up in the air. It's not flying long distances. Essentially, they've said that it's really just a test flight on Mars. As you guys know, the atmosphere is much less dense than it is here on Earth. I think they said like maybe 1% of Earth's density. I can't remember exactly, but that makes it hard for the helicopter to fly at all because there's nothing for the propellers to like push on, right? Essentially. So to make it happen, Ingenuity had to be like extremely light. The rotors had to be much larger than they would need to be if it was here on Earth. So that's kind of a feat in itself that they are able to do that. And I believe it has already successfully done a test flight. Let's see here. The only other couple of interesting facts that I thought was worth talking about is that Perseverance's job essentially is to survey the Jezero crater and the nearby riverbed for 2 years. It'll be there for 2 years surveying that one area. So I got to thinking, I'm like, 2 years really for it to like explore this one little area like that? What the hell? Like, what are you doing?
What if like a meteorite hits it, you know?
That would suck.
Knocks it out.
Sucks so bad. Well, if you remember, I think it was last year, Curiosity rover was still riding around up there on Mars, but then some giant like storm came through Mars and like covered up all of its like instruments or whatever. Oh. And like essentially covered up, I think, the solar panels that allow it to charge up. So that was a big issue.
It was the Martians.
Yeah. I think we might have even talked about it on the show, actually. But, yeah, so I'm like, why is it taking so long? Okay, so I looked up, what's the top speed of Perseverance? 0.1 miles per hour is the top speed of Perseverance.
Just crawling around.
0.1.
That's so slow.
Yeah, so slow, man. So no wonder we haven't found any aliens on Mars.
Not at that rate.
They're like, okay, here it comes. Here it comes. It's coming. We got plenty of time, bro. Don't worry about it. It's not getting here anytime soon.
5 years to find the spot. 5 years to move a foot.
Yep, exactly. So, yeah, man, pretty intense. I mean, yay science, I guess. But I'm curious. Take a guess at how much this thing costs.
Oh, jeez, I can only imagine, dude. It's like, I'm just gonna throw a number out there, like $200 million, maybe.
No.
What?
$200 million. You probably pay $200 million just for the lead engineers at at NASA to do. No, I'm just kidding. $2.2 billion is how much this
chump change
spacecraft cost. I'm assuming that probably includes not only the rover itself, but probably also the probably also the, you know, whatever the spacecraft is that gets it there. So pretty intense stuff, man. Did you get a chance to watch the live stream by chance?
I didn't watch the live stream. I did see the news after it had happened, though, and I was like, oh man, that's pretty cool. Yeah,
it was pretty fun to watch the live stream. Obviously it wasn't a live stream of the actual thing happening, but they had a cool, like, I guess CG sort of visualization of what was happening at each stage, and seeing that thing come into Mars's atmosphere and deploy that parachute, and just seeing the excitement, honestly, dude, it kind of gave me chills when it successfully landed, and all those people at NASA just are cheering and hugging and high-fiving and fist bumping all and their all work. That stuff.
Long work.
Can you imagine, like, the projects at my work take like a couple weeks to a month at most?
Yeah.
So that's intense.
They could just be like, finally, like, it's a milestone, you know, it all worked out, like all their planning, like nobody fucked up, you know.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, I'm getting drunk tonight.
Man, Perseverance, shots for Perseverance.
Yeah,
that's
some
fun.
some dude goes and gets Perseverance tattooed on his, like, chest.
Yeah they just all the lead scientists get, like, a matching tattoo.
Man,
crazy. That's great.
Well, man, can't wait to find some aliens up there. I don't know. It'd be cool if they found, like, some life or proof of life.
Oof, man, I don't know if I could handle that.
Of former life, I guess I should say.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's not get into that.
That's a long, dark, deep rabbit hole.
Really is. I'm gonna shift gears here. You know how I always do my AR VR thing. So let's get into a little bit of VR AR news, right? It's that time of the night. So Lynx reveals the first through the lens footage of their R1 mixed reality headset, which I watched earlier today. I'm sure you guys could just Google it, Lynx R1 mixed reality headset, and you'll see the video, you'll see some of the specs, some of the images and stuff that I'm about to talk about. So it's a French startup. That's the company. It's designing a mixed reality headset capable of both AR and VR. So AR is essentially, like, you can see through your glasses and, like, the world just has, like, virtual things, like, represented around like real things, and then virtual reality is like legitimate, like, spaces that are created from, you know, scratch, computer generated, and you're not seeing the outside world at all. They revealed today, Saturday, the 20th, the first look through those optics, right? So you got to go watch the video to look through them. It was first announced last year, this headset, and as a standalone headset centered around pass-through augmented reality, which is very interesting. So what that means is that means you're not like looking through your own lenses. Like I have glasses on and I'm seeing the world, right? So I'm seeing the world through my lenses. And like typical AR headsets is like you're looking at the world through your lenses, and then there's like virtual, you know, things like presented. What pass-through is cameras are looking at the outside world, and then you're looking at the outside world on a screen inside the headset. So that's what pass-through is, essentially. A lot of VR headsets already have that. A little bit about the specs here. We got a Snapdragon XR2 processor on this thing, eye tracking, which I'll get into a little bit more, and some unique optics. The first through the lens footage shows that it's not a transparent display like HoloLens or Magic Leap. That's what I'm kind of talking about when I say AR. Like HoloLens and Magic Leap have it where you're looking through your own lenses and then they put stuff around you. It's a video pass-through augmented reality, which means cameras are feeding the outside view into the headset. I already said this, but I'm going to say it again. Display while the virtual optics are rendered onto the scene or screen. The benefit of using video pass-through to achieve AR is that the virtual objects can be completely opaque and appear more realistic. So rather than just like putting them on your screen, which could cause some issues, they're able just to like, you know, mess with the actual video feed and, you know, alter things to make it look better, which I think is a much better idea in my opinion. With existing transparent AR headsets, virtual objects are partially transparent because transparent displays can't fully block incoming light. So like, even if you're looking through it, like there's going to be some transparency no matter what.
Right.
Which makes sense. It's designed to minimize the bezel occlusion, which basically is just like around when you're looking through like an AR or VR headset, like it's not like you could see like 360 around your eye. Like you're going to see like the lenses at some point, right? Like you're going to see, like I could see my lenses right now. Like it's supposed to get rid of that and make it so that like when you have it on, it's supposed to feel like you're just looking through your own eyeballs. Right. So that's going to be pretty cool. And, yeah, so it hides an eye tracking camera directly behind the lenses as well. You can go look at this image online of how it works. You do see some in the video, at least you see some artifacts from the four prisms that come together to present a singular image. And you know, just kind of wondering if that's going to go away when you put them on your eyes, or I would assume that you're not going to be able to see the artifacts of it. Like, have you ever seen like eye floaties in your eye? Like when you're looking at stuff.
Eye floaties?
Yeah.
Like little like sparkles?
No, not sparkles. Like if you like got hit in the head or something, but like inside your eye, there's like stuff floating around, believe it or not. And if you look into your eyeball with like a light and like take a picture of it, you'll see that there's like stuff floating around in there.
Okay.
And so like, that's what I assume they are talking about when they talk about like these artifacts and whatnot. So like, there's just like little things that are in your eye that like your brain actually blocks them out, right? Your brain actually prevents you from like seeing them, but they're there and you can take pictures of them.
Okay.
Which is crazy. I know. Same with like all the veins and stuff in them. Like you don't see the veins, but there's veins there. You're like looking through it all.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I think they're thinking of. And I'm hoping that I would assume that it's not really visible with the naked eye, cause that would like totally ruin it. Yeah. So anyway, that's it, man. That's the news about it. It's expected to launch this year, priced under $1,500. So I certainly won't be picking it up because that's outside of my price range, but excited to see these come out. Excited that this is becoming a thing. I think within like the next 5 years, there's probably going to be like a more consumer viable option where it's like less than, let's hope, like $300, you know, because I could probably buy something like that to fiddle around with. But until then, I'm out of the AR game, bro. So what are your thoughts on all that? I feel like I just gave a lot of information.
No, yeah, definitely a lot of information, but priced under $1,500, $14,999.
Exactly. $14.99
and 99 cents.
Yeah, $1,499.99 rounded
to 12 small payments of. Yeah. Yes. I don't know, man. It's pretty cool. I'm looking at pictures of this thing right now. You guys should go check it out. Just Google Lynx R1. Did they have to make it so like creepy looking?
Yeah. Like probably.
Like okay, so I mean I guess it makes sense, right? But the lenses that are providing the pass through video are perfectly positioned where your eyeballs would be. So it's just but on the outside of the headset, so like it looks like eyeballs.
Yeah.
So like to a third
party.
This
is the cameras,
not wearing,
yeah,
the cameras. Like, so somebody walks into your room while you're VRing it up, VR and an AR, and they look at you. They're like super creeped out.
What if they like do like a blinking mechanism, right? Like,
I was literally gonna say,
hey, what's up?
I think you should put like some. If I were to ever acquire some of these, if I scraped together $1,499, I would put some like fake glue on eyelashes.
No, dude, googly, the googly eyes.
Yeah.
Oh man.
I don't know why they just look so. That's like kind of creepy. I mean, I guess it has to be that way, but I think it's interesting. I mean, obviously they're not the first to do pass through video, right? Doesn't the not the Rift, but the Vive, doesn't the Vive do pass through?
Well, the Rift does too. I don't know about the
Vive
actually.
Pass through.
Yeah, this the one that I have has, but it's the only weird thing is it does pass through, but it's all black and white.
Oh, that's lame.
Yeah, right? It's all black and white, which I agree is like pretty freaking lame, dude.
So I guess the unique selling proposition here is the two lenses, the two cameras, so that it represents left eye, right eye.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Well, it's just the eye tracking. I think the eye tracking is probably the biggest one, and the pass-through video. Those are
the combination, you know, of those two things. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where the value is right there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess having the two cameras, you definitely would get a wider field of view with your pass-through as opposed to a single camera, it would seem, and probably
yeah.
also higher resolution.
Well, I'm pretty sure, like, this headset that I have here does double cameras, too. Like,
does it? Okay.
Yeah, like, when I look through it, it's, like, not perfectly lined up with, like, the spacing of my eyes. So you see, like, a crossing of, like, the images, you know? Like, if I was looking at you, I would actually see, like, two of you because my eyes aren't, like, lined up specifically. Yeah. But if I like move it farther away from my head, then like you'll line up perfectly, and then if I move it back to like where it's comfortable on my head, then you won't. So yeah, there's two cameras on it, but they suck.
Okay, all right, well, interesting, man. Well, yeah, that's good. Exciting. I got to get into the VR game at some point. I'm just scared to do it. I need to get my toes in the water.
Well, see if you can find like a used one, man. I'm sure you could for like dirt cheap. Get like the original Rift just to try it out, or take the plunge.
Yep.
Wait
yeah,
for
maybe.
Quest 4 to come out and just get it, dude.
Might have to. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, I think we got some video game news, and we'll close this bad boy out.
All right, man. Tell me about it. I already know you've been having some fun with Rage 2 free on Epic Game Store.
Yes, sir. Rage 2 released on the 18th. That's 2 days ago for us, for you and I, for you folks out there listening right now. If it's before the 23rd, I believe the 23rd was the cutoff date. If it's the 22nd, or if it is the 23rd, please hurry up and go to Epic Games and snatch this game for free, even if you don't plan on playing it right away. It's a $60 game. It is full priced. It's a, what do you call that? What do you call those games that are $60? What do they call it?
A
flagship.
AAA.
Yeah, guys, come on, $60. If you're not going to play it now, maybe we'll play it 2 years from now. It's a $60 game. Rage 2. I never played Rage 1. Did you?
Dude, I never even heard of this game until they came out
Me either.
With it. And I was like, what is this? I'm so confused. Like, my thoughts on it were, but they already, like, it's published by Bethesda. And I'm like, but Bethesda already has an open world post-apocalyptic franchise.
Yeah.
Why do they need another one?
Yeah.
Doesn't
yeah.
this, like, hurt them? I don't understand.
I don't know. I don't understand it myself. And it also is very Borderlandish. So I was like, okay, Borderland, Fallout. It's kind of like a cross between the two.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure what the business logic is there, but I can tell you I've played the game. I got it for free, Rage 2. I didn't play Rage 1. But the plot of the game essentially is apparently an asteroid struck Earth and it did all that carnage, and then people were like rebuilding and it was like all good and dandy, I guess, and then this other big robot guy started causing chaos, and I can't remember what they call him. It's something like with an A.
Captain
The
Chaos.
Oh shoot, was it the anyways, whatever. Bunch of bad guys.
Amazing robot.
Yeah, I don't know what his name is, but anyways, so in Rage 2, you're now trying to defeat this guy. That's kind of the plot of all video games. There's one central bad guy and his bunch of bad guys. Anyways, it's an open world game, post-apocalyptic, like we mentioned. Lots of weapons, lots of vehicles. You can customize your guns, you can unlock things, but it's very Fallout-y at the same time. So it's like you're constantly running around collecting scrap and collecting like little metal objects and random boxes of things and looking for crates that are full of ammo and health and all these different things. There's no food and water aspect to it as far as I can tell so far, so you don't got to keep your person fed and hydrated and all that good stuff. But I've only played about 2 hours of the game so far, so I don't really have a lot of insight into it, but I can tell you it's a lot of fun. The mechanic of shooting, running, you can slide, you have these different abilities where you can like push people back or you can dash or you can do the different things. Your vehicles have big guns on them and they kind of like auto lock on like nearby targets, and you use the big Gatling guns and light them up. But they've also got like Mad Max style like convoy battles. Have you ever seen like Mad Max? And it's just like they're driving down Fury Road and just these giant battles of cars. It's kind of that same gameplay style in there as well. Nice. There's different factions across the map, so depending on where you're at, you're dealing with different types of enemies. You know, so just a lot of fun, man. That's all I can say so far. It's single player only. That's kind of sucks. I really wish, I mean, it would have been, in my mind, you know, pretty easy for them to make a multiplayer component to this, whether it's a battle royale or if it's just a PvP or a deathmatch style. Just the play style of it lends itself to that. I could almost see like a Battlefield sort of vibe where you've got like 50 players in one match and you've got, you know, these different cars and things. But apparently the developers decided that they wanted to focus more on the storyline, as opposed to the multiplayer, aspect. So yeah, a lot of fun. The only qualm that I've got with the game so far is that, and it's probably something you can adjust in the settings, it's like anytime you're nearby an enemy, this like super creepy like intense metal music starts to play.
Oh yeah.
And, like, even if you don't see anybody near you, you're just like all of us, you're just driving, all of a sudden you start to hear like doom, and it's like this like creepy like screaming stuff starts happening, and like this like ghoulish sort of sounds start happening, and you're just like, why is it doing this? Where I don't see a person. And so you finally find the people, kill them, then the music stops, and it's just like, that's just like unnecessary like adrenaline boosting happening. But yeah, Siri, I'm not talking to you, Siri, go away. So anyways, man, it definitely worth checking out. And not, if nothing else, it's a $60 game. The graphics are great. You can get it for free right now, so go check out Epic Games and try it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I got it already. Everybody else should too.
Yeah, so beyond that, man, BlizzCon happened this week as well.
Yes.
So I didn't really watch a lot of the presentations, but this is the conference, which obviously is virtual, in which Blizzard announces a lot of different things. One that I'm really excited about is Overwatch 2. We got some more details around Overwatch 2. So, you know, I'm a pretty big Overwatch fan myself.
Hell yeah.
But some new stuff was revealed, including some new maps, Rome and New York City, some new game types, which include PvE, which is, you know, you fight against the Talon or Null Sector, basically AI-driven enemies. And they also have hero missions, which they, you know, Blizzard are wanting to be sort of a replayable missions. They're going to make hundreds of different missions. You know, based on the heroes you're selecting, you do different types of missions and you level up your characters. So you, I guess, makes it easier for you moving forward or something like that. One thing I thought was really cool is that they're adding in weather effects. So things like blizzards, sandstorms, there's going to be day and night conditions.
Nice.
So if you're an Overwatch player now, you can imagine adding in some of those elements. Excuse me. Could definitely change up the game for sure. And then something we're all excited about, seeing what the new characters will look like. So we're getting the same heroes with the addition of a couple new ones, but they've released some new character models. So you can go check those out online right now. They've released an updated design for Pharah, McCree, Reaper, and Widowmaker so far. And I'm sure we'll get more of those soon, but they all have slightly revised looks. As far as a release date, there's nothing that's been confirmed yet. Can't remember the gentleman's name right now, but he's like kind of the lead at Blizzard, is basically saying like it's kind of a it's done when it's done sort of situation. One of their core values is quality of the games, so they don't want to release something that's not completely done and that has a bunch of issues. So they're just going to take their time, make sure they get it right the first time. So excited to get more details on that, and hopefully one day in the future
Do you think this is going to turn into like a Call of Duty kind of thing where like every couple of years they start releasing a new Overwatch, but it's like not a whole lot's changed. They just added some maps, maybe a couple more characters, you know?
I don't think so. I think that what they're doing for this one is a big enough change to constitute a new title. Number one, Overwatch 1 came out in 2016. So yeah. People have been playing this game for 5 years now. And since then, they've probably added maybe, what, 5 or 6 new heroes? Maybe
not much, right? Like
maybe 5 maps. They constantly change things. I think each month there's a content update where they're leveling out weapons, making sure nobody's too OP. They'll buff some characters, make them a little bit stronger. They've in the past, they've changed weapons for heroes. They've given heroes different abilities. They've changed up their like special powers, things like that. Changed up their ultimates in the past. For instance, Mercy, which is like the most popular, most powerful healer of the group, her ultimate used to allow you to resurrect anybody within a specific radius of her ability, right? So she could potentially revive like 5 enemies or 5 friendlies at the same time. Now her ultimate is completely different. She floats up in the air and can heal a big crowd of people at the same time. Huh. And the resurrection feature became one of the just rechargeable sort of features where she can resurrect one person at a time. So they've done things like that where they're changing, they're making adjustments, keeps it fresh. Obviously they've introduced new levels as well, but I think now with introducing new character designs, new new game modes, and weather conditions, new graphics, things like that, I think this is big enough for them to constitute a new title. So I don't know. I definitely don't see it being just like Call of Duty. In the article I was reading, the interview, that was kind of the big point of contention too, is like, what makes this a new title versus just a big update for Overwatch? So that's something that they talked a lot about. So
yeah, I'm excited to see more game modes. I think that would be like the coolest thing, is if they could add some more, you know, PvP or PvE game modes, you know. So hopefully they release, you know, it's not just like defense or, you know, like your standard. How many are there? There's like 3 or 4 different game modes now, I think.
Yeah, so we've got capture the objective essentially, and then you've got I don't know what you technically call it, but you're essentially escort. I think you call it escort. Escorting something to an objective.
Right.
And then they've also got like a deathmatch style, which is not as popular as their other modes, but
Yeah. So I want to see some more like more creativity there, because I feel like that's their chance to like, you know, expand on their portfolio of, you know, match types and make things more interesting, you know. But yeah, I guess we'll find out. So I'm excited for it, man. Anything they do is going to be fun, because they do a great job at everything they do. So a little bit more coming from BlizzCon. Blizzard announces a Diablo 2 remaster. It's called Diablo 2 Resurrected. It was announced at BlizzCon. I think it was like the last day of BlizzCon. might have been the first day. I can't remember. I didn't watch any of BlizzCon. I just saw the news like as it was coming out. So
yeah,
It's been a long rumored makeover, but it's now been officially confirmed. It's going to be on the Nintendo Switch, PS4, PS5. It's going to be on your PC. It's going to be Xbox One, Xbox Series X, all later this year. And the technical alpha for PC is coming soon. You can sign up if you would like at diablo2.blizzcon.com. I went ahead and signed up. Can't fucking wait. Dude, I'm so excited for this, by the way. Because, dude, I played Diablo was the first PC game I ever played. And I spent countless hours on it, days probably. And then Diablo 2 came out and like everything changed. Everything changed. I spent so much time on, I love that. I've gone back and played that game like 5 years ago, like 10 years ago. Like I've gone back and played it like a bunch of times, and it's never really like lost its, like it's a nostalgia feeling. It's really never lost its like shine for me. It's always been awesome. So super excited to see them, you know, making it look nicer. So they're taking the 2D sprites and paints. And they're going to paint over them, basically. It's going to be fully 3D rendered models now. The game's new graphics can display in up to 4G resolution, but you can also toggle back to the original nostalgic graphics by pressing a button. Take me there. They're promising 7.1 Dolby surround support. Take me there. 27 minutes of remastered cutscenes. I can't wait to watch those cutscenes again, but I can't wait to watch them remastered and like just see like more details and crazy stuff there. Cause like if you've never watched the cutscenes from that game, like honestly, dude, I love those cutscenes. I love the lore behind Diablo. It's freaking awesome. And those cutscenes, like, just I could go back and watch them. I went back and watched them like late last year. I swear to God, I went back. It was awesome. So all seven classes are going to be there. The bosses will return. Like everything's supposed to stay the same. Blizzard didn't even change any of the game's itemization or balance. So it's all going to feel like it felt originally. So features cross progression for saves and will run players $40, $39.99 later this year. So you can play on your PC and then go play on your Xbox and then go pick up your Switch and do it that way.
That's awesome.
I wanted some more information on Battle.net and the release date, but I guess we don't know the release date yet. We've got to get through the alpha. But I wanted more information on Battle.net that I didn't see or I couldn't find. Because Battle.net like got shut down and it was a huge thing. Like the original Battle.net that they had, I think they shut it down and they opened up like a new one. It's still Battle.net, but
the whole interface updated.
Yeah, so like, are they? I just want to know like, what are they going to do about Battle.net? Because like, you're going to want to like play this game with other people, and like, it's hard for me to bite this like $40 pill, right? Because it's like, really, you guys are just fucking. Are you really like that? You don't have any more ideas. You don't have any more ideas. You're just gonna like go to something that was, you know, 20 years old, you're just going to remaster it and charge $40. Like, that's a little shitty, you know? I mean, just give it to us for free, you know?
Exactly.
But, you know, it is what it is. I'm going to pay the money for it because they know I will. Those bastards know I will. How dare they?
banking on it, man.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm going to play it. But, I'm not going to be happy about the $40 pill, but I'm going to be happy playing that damn game
for sure.
Hours and hours and hours. So, yeah. That's awesome, never played Diablo, right?
I have not. No, I have not. Might be the time to try it. I don't know.
Maybe. I think when
not Diablo, for 40 bucks.
When Diablo 4 comes out, bro, like, don't even call me, bro. My phone's going to be off. I'll probably take that week off, dude. Swear to God. Like,
same for me when Overwatch 2 comes out.
Yeah.
I was actually late to the Overwatch game. I remember seeing somebody play it and I was like, what is this? And I not long after that I finally got it and I was like, man, this is the best.
Well, dude, I'm super late. You're the one that turned me on to Overwatch.
Yeah. It's just one of those games where, and Diablo probably feels the same for you. It's just like you can just kind of zone out and just kind of relax while you're playing it.
Yeah.
It's not so high intensity. Complete opposite of Rage 2, by the way.
Oh,
I literally was playing it last night and I played it for a couple hours and I was like, all right, man, I need to switch over to Overwatch. Like, let my heart rate decrease a little bit. It's a little bit too intense.
Oh, jeez.
But Yeah, when you got these mutants jumping in your face and like trying to tear your face off, and like you're blasting with shotguns and death metal music's playing.
Yeah,
and, like,
good luck just going to sleep after that.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, I need to decrease this heart rate for a second first. But yeah, man, lots of cool news coming out of BlizzCon for sure. This is the kind of the time of the year, I feel like, where things start to heat up a little bit with the summertime. And obviously, the closer and closer we get, you know, to later parts of the year when more stuff comes out. But exciting, exciting stuff. But yeah, I think that about does it, man, unless you got anything else.
Nah, man, that's it. Take us out.
Yeah, man, for sure. So as always, guys, we appreciate you tuning in to another episode. And we ask that you please like and subscribe on YouTube, follow on Spotify, and of course, come say hi on Instagram and Twitter.
That's right. And of course, if you really want to help us grow the show, please share this episode with a friend who you think will like it. For now, we'll see y'all in the next one. So, toodles.
See ya.